All right, bad fish. We're going to talk about a bad fish. No, it's good fish coming up in just a minute. But Juno Afternoon is made possible with support from Hanson Gress, delivering IT support to local businesses for over 15 years. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today on Juno Afternoon on this beautiful day. And with me next is a pioneering biologist, Ebbett Sidden, who's been awarded the Presidential Early Career Award for scientists and engineers. And I'm sure she's sick of talking about that specific thing, but it's a pretty cool honor. Congratulations and welcome to Juno Afternoon. Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
So tell me about – I've read a little bit about what you did, and I'm so fascinated because you make fish bombs. So this is some early work that you did that you were recognized for. Some of that work was what you were recognized for. Is that
right? Yes. A lot of the work I did for my dissertation work through the University of Alaska Fairbanks involved – looking at fish energetics, and to do that, we use a machine called a bomb calorimeter.
And you blow up fish.
And we blow up fish.
And what you were just saying to me was so fascinating because sometimes I think what happens, you know, scientists name their study something kind of funny
flashy
because, okay, this might, you know, this will be fun. It's either just fun to do. You were just saying, no, it's that's just what it is. It really just is. We're blowing up fish.
We do blow them up and measure their energy.
So yep. what, tell me about what that helps you learn about fish, why you would want to know the energy, and a little bit about the process of blowing up a fish. How do you go about doing that?
Yeah. We'll get to the process. The reason why we want to know about the energy of the fish is because it tells us a lot about whether they're going to survive. So a lot of the work that has been done in the Bering Sea on pollock, which is the biggest commercial fishery in the U.S. and it's in the Bering Sea, there was a huge project, a big effort several years ago called the Bering Sea Project. And one of the big things that we learned out of that project was that the age zero fish, when they're in their first year of life, they've got lots of gauntlets to get through, lots of bottlenecks to whether they're going to survive and become part of the population that can be fished by the commercial fishery. And one of those big gauntlets is whether they make it through their first winter. They have to have enough energy. They have to have found enough food and get enough energy on board to survive their first winter. And so that's when we measure their energetics.
It's such an interesting way to put it because you often think about animals fattening up, right? And so you think about, well, bears getting fattened up, things like that. But it's interesting that what you're really talking about is not just the fat reserves, not just the muscle, but this total package of their entire energy.
Yep.
Because that's what they really will use up all of.
Yeah, and it's an accumulation of what conditions they faced that whole summer leading up to it. Did they have the right prey, the right food source that was, you know, as they're growing from teeny tiny fish, they can only fit certain food items in their mouth. Is that food available to them when they're that size? And then as they get bigger, they can eat bigger things. Is that food available to them? So can they get as much energy on board and then survive that first winter?
Was there immediate results, immediate conclusions, or some multi-year conclusions that people were able to start drawing from that research?
Yeah, so there's been a lot of effort, and not just, you know, myself. I work as part of a big team here at the Alaska Fishery Science Center and also with folks down in Seattle. And that work linked – in warm years, there's lower quality food for the pollock. We see that they have lower total fat or energy at the end of that first summer. More of them don't survive that first winter. Fewer of them survive to the fishery. So there's this direct correlation with how many fish end up available in the fishery. And all of that, all of those connections swap when it's cooler. So under cool years, the food source is better, the fish energy is better, and their survival is better. And so we work really closely with the stock assessment folks down in Seattle to provide them those sort of early warning indicators.
I know it's multi-leveled and incredibly complex when you're talking about ecosystems, but is there a pretty direct thing you can – that people, scientists can say about, okay, this is why when it's colder, there's more food in the water. This is why when it's warmer, there's less food in the water. In some ways, when you think about land environments, sometimes that's counterintuitive. Mm-hmm. Rich jungle environments that are hot and steamy and warmer seem like the ones that are the most lush. But in the oceans, at least in these Pacific oceans, that maybe is not true.
Yeah,
these northern oceans.
In the Bering Sea especially, a lot of the ecosystem responds to the seasonal sea ice. So it's it's not always present in the Bering Sea, and how much of the Bering Sea shelf ends up covered by winter sea ice depends on the year. So in the winter of 2017 to 18, we had this, you know, what we thought might have been a one-off kind of trifecta of things that meant there was no sea ice in the Bering Sea for the first time ever. There was lots of headlines about it, this unprecedented lack of sea ice. And that changes the whole sort of productivity of the system. It means, well, it's lots of sort of scientific details, but it changes.
Yeah.
So water production in the water column depends on how far sunlight reaches down and sort of kicks off blooms. And that happens when the water column is more stratified. So we think about thermoclines. If you're swimming in a lake or something, you can feel the temperature get cooler.
Right.
That stratification in the
– I hate that feeling. Yeah.
Keep your feet up high in the water column. Swim horizontal.
So creepy.
So that stratification in the water, it's not just temperature for in the ocean. It's also sort of equal parts salinity. And when you don't have sea ice involved in the system, you lose that part of the stratification. So it means the water column doesn't have as much of a delineation between top and bottom.
Because the water columns. This fresh water is melting in the form of ice, which making it less salinity in the water column, which means that it's
exactly
not giving you the
I must have explained it.
You
okay.
Did.
Great.
And I'm not that smart.
And that's so that stratification, like if it has stronger stratification, you get Bigger blooms, essentially, and more productivity.
And then there's more, and that's more food.
More, the that's whole more food web is based off of that.
Right.
Yep.
Wow, fascinating. Well, as you continue this work, what are some of the things that you're seeing? What are some of the trends you're chasing? What sort of information are you trying to continue to glean out of this work?
Well, we're working. So the sort of Pollock energetics story is one that we continue to work on. We, you know, the energetics is a piece of what determines whether they survive. Certainly there's a piece of their predators, you know, how many predators are out there eating them and how they're impacted by things like the productivity and the changes in the sea ice. So we continue to work on pollock and answering questions of what other factors in the ecosystem are going to impact their survival. The other piece of my work, and it's sort of broader, is NOAA produces these ecosystem status reports. So I lead the ecosystem status report for the Bering Sea. It pulls together all kinds of pieces of information, including things like, you know, how is the pollock energy doing? But from top to bottom, sea ice, temperature, zooplankton, pollock, mammals, birds, humans, what's going on in the ecosystem right now in 2019? And then we use that information, we provide that information to the folks who actually set fishing quotas for commercial fisheries in the Bering Sea.
Yeah. So that's the kind of immediate management work that's being done based on that sort of science that's happening.
Yeah. And so some of those things we track are the things you've heard about in the news, like the gray whale mortalities. And, you know, that's a piece of the story. And that is likely linked to changes in the northern Bering Sea ecosystem as a result of that lack of sea ice that started 2 years ago.
Well, this is a huge question. We only have a minute or so left. But how's it going? I mean, it seems like it doesn't seem like it's going well for the Bering Sea right now, or for the especially the food fish that we've depended on for many, many years. It seems like those stocks are there's danger signs coming up. It seems like. I mean, I'm a layman reading just the news, as you were saying, but
there are red flags, things like the gray whales. That's a red flag about what the system can sustain in terms of productivity, but there are winners in the system too. Things like Bristol Bay sockeye are having off the charts runs the last 2 years. So there, it depends on, you know, what stock you're talking about and where you're talking about it. But there are certainly, when we provide the status report to the managers, it's a story of, you know, general ecosystem, what's happening. And then they have to use that information and contextually when they think about the individual stocks they're managing. But there are winners and losers, and there are
– But a time of change.
It is certainly a time of change. Yeah, definitely.
Well, Ebbett Sidden, it would be great to continue to talk to you. I could talk to you over a long time about this. But first and foremost, congratulations on your recognition as the Presidential Early Career Award, Scientists and Engineers Award that you just recently received. And thanks so much for coming in and telling us all about what you're working on and about fish bombs.
Well, I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me. Okay. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much.